Hi there, and welcome to this edition of Sex Throughout History. The date is February 24th, and we're recording live from Burling Library at Grinnell College. With us, as always, is Lila, Naya, Sydney, and our editor, Elena. Today on the podcast, we will be discussing The Erotics of Chin-Chucking by Will Fisher. This article takes a critical look at paintings, writings, and court case files of the 17th century to describe the act of chin-chucking and to analyze the act itself and how it was interpreted in society. Using these primary sources, the author argues that chin-chucking was a sexual act, but also addresses how many sources of art, literature, and law attempted to socialize the act.
Whoa. What the heck is chin-chucking?
That's a really great question. So chin-chucking is a gesture in which one person gently strokes or pinches the chin or cheek of another. Basically, it's a prolonged touching of the cheek or the chin. In a sense, yes. During this time, chin-chucking suggested a strong sense of familiarity that many people would not have unless they were in some semblance of an intimate relationship. Chin-chucking was often reserved for couples who were in courtship or married, but even then, it was still pretty private. Many documents and paintings represented chin-chucking with other intimate acts such as kissing, embracing, as well as sharing a bed. Due to the fact that chin-chucking was often mentioned with these other acts, it was considered to be an erotic act. With that, evidence of chin-chucking would sometimes be used in cases of adultery to prove infidelity due to its intimate nature.
Interesting. But were there ways that chin-chucking was not sexual?
Chin-chucking was considered to be both a form of platonic affection and or a form of erotic persuasion. In a work written by Robert Herrick, two lovers who are chaste also engaged in chin-chucking. There are also examples of this act in same-sex platonic relationships. In a painting by Raphael, Jupiter and Cupid are involved in chin-chucking, and there was no assumed eroticism. We might also ask what counts as a sexual act in the first place.
But we mentioned earlier that it was used in court cases as evidence to prove adultery. Could it be considered cheating?
There are many court cases that look at the testimonies of witnesses to prove adultery. As was mentioned before, chin-chucking was happening alongside other actions, like embracing and kissing. But there was one text from the 17th century where chin-chucking was enough to convince a husband that his wife was cheating. In the Broom family, Mr. Broom apparently came home one evening and found the parish priest in the parlor of the family home chin-chucking his wife. And he was so enraged by the priest's behavior that he killed him.
All that over some chin-chucking? That seems super excessive. But on a different note, I have a different question for you both. Do you think that chin-chucking enforces a power dynamic or makes a commentary on gender roles of that time?
I think there is a focus on the active position rather than the person's gender identity throughout this article. The person who chin-chucks is in the dominant role, and the person that is receiving the chin-chuck is in the submissive role. However, having women in a dominant role was not considered normative in many ways. Shakespeare's Venus is particularly interesting in this regard because she is an example of a woman who takes on the active role. Women who took this role on were considered, like Venus, to be sexually dominant, and there were many descriptions of prostitutes chin-chucking their clients. This played with power dynamics that existed outside of sexual life.
I think that's a really interesting point, Naya. So I guess my final question for you is pleasure socially constructed throughout history?
Well, I think chin-chucking definitely supports that it was. Today it's difficult to argue that stroking someone else's chin is erotic and pleasurable, but these legal cases, literature, and art illustrate that chin-chucking had higher stakes in the past. At the very least, Fisher's piece shows us how erotic relationships were socially constructed in early modern England.
Right, and I think the chin-chucking context is also important because claiming that all forms of pleasure throughout history are socially constructed is a totally different claim. We would need more examples and evidence to say that pleasure is always influenced by the text of the historical time period. The authors make it clear that chin-chucking explores only a small piece of this much larger process of historical overlay.
Well, that doesn't make it any less interesting and scary. So if chin-chucking went out of style, will my seductive moves also be out of date in the future?
It makes sense that they would. Times change and people change. That's the nature of history. Plus, not everyone during this time period wants to be the recipient of your moves.
Wow. So what you're saying is my seductive move at Harris will also be outdated?
Well, that's all we have time for today. Tune in next time to Sex Throughout History for more juicy details.